Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are just as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They're milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey, presented by Betches Media. This is an exploration of all pop culture, from the classic reality TV moments of the past and present to the latest Daily Mail headlines and everything in between. We'll dive into all the infamous and notorious messes you can't stop watching. We're looking at you, Tom Sandoval. Folks, welcome to your Tuesday episode. This is So Bad It's Good with Ryan Bailey. This is your pal, Ryan. How the heck is everybody doing out there? I hope you had a good Monday. Listen, we have amazing guests today. If you want to skip right to them, you totally can. There will be a timestamp. We have the directors of this really incredible docuseries that's on ID Discovery and Max right now called Quiet On Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV. Mary Robertson and Emma Schwartz are joining us today. I did this interview last week, and this thing came out, the first two parts on Sunday night and the last two parts on Monday night. It is a very intense look at behind the scenes at Nickelodeon, Dan Schneider, Brian Peck, Drake Bell, so many names involved. And if you've seen this, you know exactly who I'm talking about when I say those names. But if you haven't, I really urge you to listen to this and then dive in. Or maybe dive into the show and then listen to this afterwards. I think it's a really important docuseries, I think. And, we celebrate these things, in regards to pop culture, but also we celebrate these things, growing up as kids. You watch these shows, you fall in love with these shows, and, they're kind of like bright and bubbly and make you feel good. And there's like kind of, it's really unfortunate when you find out the seediness that is happening behind the scenes, because you think, if anything, these shows would be protected more because they're being viewed by kids. The people in them are kids, but the people that are running them and producing them and directing them and around them on set are all adults. So it is a very up close look at all of this. And I thought it was really well done. And like I said yesterday on the yesterday's show, and even last week, what I really appreciated about this docuseries is sometimes things can be really sensationalized. And what these directors who come from a reporting background, what was made clear is that the reporting in this is really solid. The reporting in this, they really focused on what they could prove, on what they was factually out there. And I appreciate that. We do live in now a society in a day and age with 24-hour, not just news coverage, but pop culture coverage, Reddit threads, TMZ, Daily Mail. There's so much noise, TikTok, everybody having a new conspiracy theory, a new rabbit hole to deep dive down. I mean, you see it today. I mean, with Kate Middleton, by the way, Kate Middleton, man, she is busy as heck. Now they have her at some farm in England, new photos of Kate Middleton looking happy, walking at a farm. And these photos were presented first by TMZ, which is very weird for TMZ to break those photos in particular. But already, like, people were like, okay, that's her. And then by the end of the day, people were like, that's definitely not her. Even Andy Cohen got in the mix and was like, that's not Kate. And I was like, hell, that's not Kate Chastain. That's Kate Middleton. I don't know where I stand. I got to tell you, every time people try to pull me into this royal stuff, like, it piques my interest to a degree, but it doesn't fully have me there, because I think the royal family, I mean, well, I know why it's fascinating, because the royal family is just like a horrific reality show in real life. I mean, they are a reality show without like 24/7 cameras behind the scenes. And I think potentially it's that. And they just continue to repeat the same mistakes, the history of this coming from Princess Diana. And the thing is, too, Prince William knows what his mom went through and knows the hunger and the fervor that was out there after Diana to get photos of her. And that's how she tragically lost her life. Why create all of this hysteria again and put your wife in any kind of jeopardy of people trying to chase these photos? That's the thing that, you know, there are so many things. It's like, oh my God, I feel like they're so in deep with all of these weird lies and stuff that they probably don't even have to lie about, but they're in so deep that they just keep making weird mistakes. But I don't know what you, if you guys saw that photo, if you thought it was completely on the up and up. People are saying it's a body double. It's a Kate Middleton lookalike. Oh, man, those Kate Middleton lookalikes, their business is booming right now, just booming. Anyways, that's what our show today is going to be. Like I said, you can skip right to that interview now with the timestamp, but I'm going to do a couple of pop culture stories in the meantime. So let's get into that. Thank you so much for your support as always. Just a gentle reminder, if you want to leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, that's always great. Thank you for all the new Patreon members. Hello, baddies. Hello, baddies. Oh, hello, hello, hello. It's so funny. I'm 4 years into this and I still feel so icky when I promote myself. I have to kind of desensitize and say, well, I'm promoting a show, which I'm proud of. I work on this. Meditza works on this. Sandra works on this. You know, these things I'm proud of. You know, Meditza, it's so funny. She's doing so amazing with these video clips. And I think I've told you this before. Maybe I told the Patreon this weekend on the Q&A episode was I don't love looking at my face and I never have, which is like the weirdest thing. Cause why would you start off wanting to be an actor? And I don't have a good answer for you guys. I don't know. Like even the TV or movies that I've done in the past, I don't go back and watch. Like I know actors that love seeing themselves that like really like, oh, love it. I am not one of those people. I love working. And then that is kind of like the end. Like I don't sit there and go, I'm going to watch this horrible Lifetime movie I'm in. But she's doing these video clips based on like things that like, you know, the Vanderpump Rules recap, or she made a video clip of the Sophie Ross pencil dive talking about Carl on Summer House. And, for so long, I wouldn't put them up because I didn't want to, you know, and even the YouTube, like she'll put up two, like, you know, my full recaps over on YouTube, but I, you know, it's like, once I'm done, Meditza can do whatever she wants with them, you know, like she's like, that's yours now. Like I don't go to YouTube and like, sometimes there'll be a notification, on my phone about a YouTube comment. So if it's like 2 a.m. or something, I'll see something really quickly. And most of the time it's positive, but I try to stay away from all that stuff. So anyways, 2024 is the year of fuck it. You know, listen, I'm not Brad Pitt. I'm never going to be. This is how I look. This is what it is. And hopefully by doing it though, you can get more people to listen to the show or watch the show or anything like that. So we can keep going with this thing. I had a bad day yesterday, but I had a good day today. And it was just because I did the things on my to-do list. That to-do list, it's always there haunting you, right? It's always there just like, ah. And I scheduled a delivery that I needed scheduled. I called Toyota where I leased my car from about something. I went on a long hike. I read a whole book with my eyes, not even an audiobook, with my eyes, because tomorrow, well, I have to wake up early because I'm interviewing a couple of the cast members from Summer House Martha's Vineyard, which premieres this Sunday, second season. I watched the first episode. I really dug it. And, you know, even if you didn't watch the first season, you can hop right in. It's, you know, I would suggest going back and watching it for enjoyment because I thought it got really good, but you don't need to appreciate the first episode. But I have to get up early because they're on East Coast time. Do that. But I had to read this book that one of the people that I love in comedy, they wrote a book. And so I read it because I get to interview this person tomorrow. I don't know when you guys are going to hear it. I think we have to hold it until the book comes out. But I'm really excited about that. So I read the whole book. I mean, I love this. I'm like a 7-year-old. I read the whole book, Mom. I read the whole book with my eyes. It wasn't just an audio book. And so that was the thing. It's daunting, man. You know, our attention spans, as they get less and less, you pick up a book and you're just like, can I do this? And then I found myself just really enjoying it. I've gotten so used to audiobooks lately, which I used to think that was cheating. You know, I was one of those purists as a kid. where it was like, no, the written word needs to be read with thou eyest, thou eyes, thou eyes. Anyway, you need to read them with your eyes. And then I realized, how the heck am I going to do this? And then I was like, okay, I can listen to nonfiction or any like celebrity autobiography. Those are perfect for audiobooks. And sometimes I even prefer them more because if it's like an actor I love, I want to hear their voice. Like I'm the Barbara Streisand book, 48 hours, that audiobook. And I got 90% of the way done. And then my hold lapsed at the library. You only get it for like 3 weeks. And now I have to wait like another, I think it said 6 weeks for my chance at getting the Barbara Streisand autobiography again, just to finish the last 10%. And I came so far with Barbara, like, oh my God, I love that thing. But 48 hours. But I listened to it at like double the speed. So it's like 24 hours, but that's still a lot, you guys. But good day. And then I even got a lot of work done. I knew I had to come do this intro, but I was able to, we squeezed in a couple episodes of The Traitors Australia. Because I told you on Monday's episode, did all the Traitors UK, finished the first season, the first 6 episodes of the second season, and now I'm caught up. So every Thursday will be, I guess, a new episode of the Traitors UK second season. And then we switched over to the Traitors Australia, and they have 1 season on Peacock, and we are now 9 episodes in out of 12. I mean, just burning through these things. I am in gameplay mode. I am in in fact, I saw that Trishel and Bergie, my sweet Bergalicious, they are doing like some Traitors cruise. And there was part of me was like, do I want to do a Traitors cruise? Do you think, a crew just like, are you a Duchess of Deception, Ryan? Like I would love, I mean, part of me is intrigued. I don't think I can do it, but a part of me was like, man, that would be kind of, I'm so in Traitors mode right now, but then you would have to go on I don't know. It's something that's just dancing around my mind right now. So let me know if I should go on the Traitors cruise, you guys. In fact, if anybody is listening from the Traitors cruise, please reach out to me, please. Anyways, we've got a busy week. Tonight, you guys, is the night, the Valley series premiere. Jax Taylor's magnum opus premieres tonight after a new episode of Vanderpump Rules. So I don't know. Let me know. Should I be covering that on this show? Should I be recapping that now that Beverly Hills is over? I saw the first episode. I dug it. I want to hear what you guys have to say about it. Now, there was a rumor. I don't know. Listen, so Andy Cohen went on his radio show on Radio Andy on Sirius XM today with John Hill and said, you know, I love him talking about hosting reunions, and it was out in LA, and he said, listen, there's 2 types of reunions I do, you know, one where it is so, you know, sometimes kind of awful that I'll just want to get, you know, get out of there, have a tequila, listen to music, zone out. And then there's ones that I like so much that I immediately get on the phone with producers out of there. I text with the cast members, you know, and he said, this was one of those where it was great. And he said he thought they were going to be done at 6, but then something happened at the very end, which kind of ignited a whole other conversation. Now, this coincides with a rumor that I think Bravo and Cocktails first posted today. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. Let me know who did post that, but I think it's Bravo and Cocktails, that it was Lala and Ariana that went at it, that they went at it at the very end. And it was something that was so bad that it was like, I think the quote was like, it was like a friendship ender, like that they agreed to not be friends at that point. And I am so curious. Now, listen, we can't rush to judgment on these things. Like, there's a lot of false information about everything. We just talked about Kate Middleton. That is the name of the game, too, is to throw out just, I mean, how many rumors did, you know, turned out with Scandaball to be completely not true? Just completely not true. So you got to keep your wits about you and kind of, you know, try to parcel through the garbage. But I will say, I mean, you could see a world in which it would happen, but I also, I the Lala of it all, man. And Lala is going to be on Jeff Lewis on Sirius on Wednesday, and I'm hosting that after show. So when I see her, should I just say, hey, did you get in a fight with Ariana? I wonder if they'll talk about, I hope Jeff will bring it. Now, I don't think Jeff really watches Vanderpump Rules, but I hope I'm going to maybe mention to it to like, hey, bring up this and see what she says. Cause I would be so curious what she's going to say if she's, you know, having to keep it a little close to her vest until the reunion time, you know, until it actually comes out. So I am, I don't know, but I would be really disappointed if that fight is true. I don't know. I mean, Lala, like she says, she's a pit bull, but I hope it is directed in the right way. And, you know, I mean, listen, I was watching her Instagram videos before the reunion where she was comfy, cozy in her little bubble and, you know, conserving the energy, you know, and I just hope, I really hope, because I think Lala and Sheena, I'm going to be really interested to see how the rest of this plays out this season, the final seven episodes. But also Andy said that in these seven episodes that Lala and Brock, he says Brock and Lala turn out to be the voice of reasons this season. And he also said Lala has, he told Lala that this was her best season yet. And I listen, maybe this last seven episodes, Lala developed some sort of superpower, like fighting or like flying or something, because by judging these first seven episodes, I would not think this was her best season.
Tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card? With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yeah, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime. So, the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
So I'm really curious now, but you also have to really temper. That's another thing. You have to temper everything that Andy Cohen says, because he's, you know, Barnum and Bailey's. It's his circus. He's got to keep people excited, keep people engaged. And that's what he does best. You know, I've heard Andy say so many times about reunions are like, oh my God, it was incredible. And then it turns out to be so. So you got to kind of wade through what's true even with that stuff. So I'm very curious, but I wanted to bring that up. Make sure everybody watches The Valley tonight. I can't wait to hear what you guys think about it. Mauricio Umansky's Buying Beverly Hills season 2 premieres this week on Netflix as well. He is doing the press rounds with his daughters. Bryce Sander from Entertainment Tonight brought up the Paris Hilton Instagram comment where Paris was like, dude, you've been like literally writing off my family for the last couple of years, and we don't want to be a part of your stupid Netflix show. I'm paraphrasing. And that was brought up to Mauricio, and he's like, hey, love bean, come on. No, he was like, hey, you know, like in, on my end, like, listen, it was two men, you know, two businessmen. He wasn't going to give me what I wanted, so I had to go out and do that. And he was like, I had to provide for my family. I'm like, yeah, you had to provide for your family, but providing for your family, it doesn't mean you need to earn hundreds of millions of dollars. You can provide for your family on a limited budget. Like I, you know, my parents did it very well, very lower middle class. And we were, you know, I would say we never got name brand cereal, but that's besides the point. So it'll be interesting to see if Buying Beverly Hills, because we will have scenes peppered with Mauricio and Kyle and the daughters. And I'm curious what the percentage rate of Mauricio and his issues, what percentage rate of the show will be about that, and what percentage of the show will be about the selling of real estate in Beverly Hills and his daughter's stories and things like that. Also, Brandi Glanville in Bravo News, she was tweeting up a storm tonight. Actually, just one tweet. So she tweeted this tonight. Watch What Happens Live had Jenny McCarthy on. And she tweeted, the last time I was on Watch What Happens Live with Jenny McCarthy, Andy stopped the show in the middle so Jenny McCarthy could take a 10-minute, quote, bathroom break. It was the only time that ever happened on all my times on Watch What Happens Live. Hashtag crazy. Brandi, let your lawyers do your work. You are not helping them by any of this shit. Like, I can just see you with a big goblet of Chablis tweeting up a story, like tweeting this bullshit. Like, yeah, listen, also somebody already tracked down the Jenny McCarthy. I mean, unfortunately, this is how crazy the world is. Somebody already tracked down an article where Jenny McCarthy has admitted that she battles with diarrhea. I'm like, Hell yeah, sister. Me and you both. All right. Talk about all right. And I was just like, she actually probably did have a bathroom emergency. Don't try to like make it sound like she was off doing coke for 10 minutes when, by the way, that's not a, you know, if you're in there for 10 minutes doing coke, that, like, come on, like, that's ridiculous, Brandy. And that kind of insinuation is going to get you even in more hot water. Like, what a dorky thing to do. Like, listen, if you are going to be a part of some kind of reality reckoning, do your part. Don't make, I mean, like, I'm not, I just, that's so ridiculous of a statement. Like, listen, Jenny McCarthy has, and remember Camille Grammer, if you guys remember, she was the spokesman for IBS, irritable bowel syndrome, which is another like, hell yeah, me too, brother. You guys know way too much. Yeah. Okay. You're having your morning coffee. It's fine. No, Camille Grammer was the spokesperson for IBS back in the day when she was married to Kelsey Grammer. I am not making this up. It is not a joke. Look it up. But you know, people, I do wonder about that sometimes on talk shows. Like, what happens if like you're in that thing, the excitement, the nerves, you know, and then all of a sudden your stomach just is not participating. Like, what happens? Like, I always think about that too in like Mission Impossible movies or Fast and Furious. Like, you know, you never see Vin Diesel being like, oh my God, this car race, I literally have to shit my brains out. Like, that would be so realistic for me. I'm like, I'm in the middle of a car chase, but does that McDonald's have a bathroom? I've got to pull over right now. So yeah, Brandy, basically stop. Just stop. Stop. We talked about Bruno Mars owing $50 million to MGM Grand, in gambling debt. Now, MGM said today in a statement that this is not true, but I don't even know if I can believe anybody anymore. He does a residency at MGM. I mean, MGM can't literally put out a press release going, yeah, he owes us a lot of money. That guy better get to singing and dancing. Like, he can't do that. Okay, so I talked Kate Middleton. I talked my fascination with the traders. A couple more things. Oh, that's what I wanted to say. Listen, I was on my walk today. I was in the Hollywood Hills and already huffing and puffing, listening to an audiobook. And you know how I've been talking about for the last 6 months, you know, I haven't really gotten any kind of sign from my mom, any kind of, you know, and I really want it. And I don't know if this was a sign, but I got to tell you, it looked really beautiful. There's this one area in the Hollywood Hills where you can see out on Los Angeles, and you look downtown or you can look towards like the beach area. And sometimes if it's really clear, you can see the ocean. And it was right around like right before dusk, and you could see the ocean a little bit. And there was this beautiful bird. I don't know if it was like it was a beautiful bird. I wish I could, and you can kind of see, well, you're probably not going to see this image, but I took pictures of it. And there's no special association with my mom and that bird. But I don't know, the thought in my mind, because I said, oh, that's really beautiful. And then my mom popped into my mind and I was looking at the ocean and it made me think, you know, because then a couple other birds joined this bird and it just looked so fun. Like these birds were like diving and it just looked like, I was like, man, that's one of the probably the awesome things about being a bird. You're just up there just flying. And they looked like they were like playing with each other in the air of just like nosediving and coming around. And I watched this for like 4 minutes and it was just right there in front of me and I could see the ocean. And I thought, that's what I hope. I mean, I should have thought about this more before I spoke it out loud. I hope my mom is doing, not that I hope she's a bird, but I do hope that wherever she is, that she's having the time of her life, that she is like a kid again, that she is able to go as fast as she can and as high up as she wants to and dive down and just have fun. And it reminded me of something, you know, my mom, you know, very strict in a lot of ways. And she didn't, you know, she would cut loose in weird ways, right? She would cut loose, you know, and she liked her wine, but, my mom had like a real, and I only learned this as I got older, she loved the ocean. You know, there was a certain period of time when she lived in Florida as a little girl, and she would just sit out there on the beach and watch the ocean. And, you know, my mom's was not very poetic or anything like that. My dad is. But she would talk about the ocean, and that's why even when she was sick, she she would always want to go to the ocean. She would always want to go. In fact, when we did the cruise, you know, and that was, and she was really bad, you know, like it was bad. We didn't think she was going to be able to do the cruise. She, when we came back, and it was like a big production doing that, you know, she was already trying to plan the next thing. She was like, what if we did something in Santa Barbara? What if we did something in Santa Barbara? And, you know, we thought, I mean, and we all kind of thought, well, there's no way we can, but we're like, yeah, of course. And we obviously weren't able to do that. And it didn't even get into the planning stages, but she wanted to see the water again. There was something really freeing for her with the water. And that's the other thing that I keep thinking about, how much she loved that. And it was really nice to see those birds flying and it looked so fun. And then being able to see the ocean and remembering what joy that gave her. And it made me, that made me really happy. And like I said, I don't think it was a sign, but my mom did pop into my head. And usually when my mom pops into my head in the last while, it's been really sad, really like, oh God, you know, and it throws me for a really hard loop, you know, like where you're just like laying in one place, just shivering, you know, like thinking about like, what the fuck, man? What is life all about, man? Are you kidding me? Isn't it crazy that we all live, right? You're listening to me, right? And then we eventually all have to do that. We all have to do that part. Like, and that's a trick. You have to live life like that's not in front of you somewhere. Isn't that crazy? Isn't that crazy? I'm not even trying to bum you out. I'm just like, isn't that wild? So even when the sky is falling, which the sky has fallen a lot this past year, I just, you know, it's like at the end of the day, I don't know. But anyways, I wanted to share that with you because I know I've talked about that a lot in the last couple of months. And wouldn't it be great if the birds was like, hey, Ryan, what's going on? And then the bird talked to me, you guys. Okay, so sorry, it's too sappy, but I wanted to share that with you. Okay, a couple more things. Richard Simmons. Okay, this is a name you probably didn't expect me to talk about today, but Richard Simmons, you guys, he disappeared. Remember, he was an exercise guru, but I mean that in the best way. He was like on the talk show circuit. He would be on Letterman all the time. And he was just zany and full of love and life. And you just like this guy, I just remember as a kid, you know, at first I was scared of him when he would go on talk shows. And then I grew to love Richard Simmons. And it's always a regret that I never got to do one of his workout classes in Beverly Hills that he kept doing. And then all of a sudden he disappeared from public life. And he said everything was fine. He just was done. He was just done with it. But he never gave any like real solid, you know, reasons why. And there was a whole podcast, what, like 6 or 7 years ago, called like, what is it? Finding Richard Simmons or something. I listened to every episode trying to figure out what happened. And it wasn't really conclusive. In fact, you know, the guy that was searching for him found him and like, but then they had to even cut that episode. That was kind of mysterious, but he's been in the news a little bit in the last couple of months because he has started like making some Twitter things again or Facebook posts. Well, today he made this Facebook post and people were really worried about him. So it says, I have some news to tell you, please don't be sad. I am ... dying. Oh, I can see your faces now. The truth is we are all dying. Every day we live, we are getting closer to our death. Why am I telling you this? Because I want you to enjoy your life to the fullest every single day. Get up in the morning and look at the sky. Count your blessings and enjoy. Start with a healthy breakfast. Do you like oatmeal, whole wheat toast, eggs once or twice a week, fresh fruit, or half of an English muffin? Then there is lunch. How about a nice salad? Don't eat your dinner too late. Combine your protein with a starch and a few vegetables. And sure, once in a while, have dessert. One healthy day of eating will lead to the next and the next. Every day that you are alive, you have got to move. Whether it is standing or sitting, you have got to move your body every day. Start with stretching, then cardio and strength. I have a lot of workout videos on YouTube that you can use, or maybe you have some videos at home. And before you go to bed, do a little stretching. Stretch your neck, your shoulders, and your arms. And don't forget your legs. Do some circles with your ankles. Point and flex your feet, and I promise that you will have a better night's sleep. There is something else very important that you must do. Tell the ones that you love them. Hug those people and children who you really care for. A big hug really goes a long way. If you have time, I want you to listen to a terrific song. It is by Tim McGraw. It is called Live Like You Were Dying. Live today and don't forget to pray. Love, Richard. which I thought was a beautiful post, beautiful. But people were freaking out because he started off with, I'm dying, you know? But I think this was about so much more than that, just saying we all are in a sense, kind of just like what I was talking about. So anyways, people were freaking out so much that he had to make another post that said, hey, sorry many of you have gotten upset about my message today. Even the press has gotten in touch with me. I am not dying. It was a message about saying how we should embrace every day that we have. Sorry for the confusion. Love, Richard. And by the way, that live like you were dying, Tim McGraw song, you know, I don't like country music, and especially pop country. Like it's one of those genres I can't get into, but that Tim McGraw song, when it came out, I had that. I ran a marathon at one point, you guys, when I ran a marathon at like, what was it, like 10 or 12 years ago, because I had quit smoking cigarettes. And I needed something to focus on. And I trained to do a marathon and I did the Long Beach Marathon. But that was on my playlist, Live Like You're Dying, Live Like You're Dying, the Tim McGraw song. And it chokes me up every time, but it's like, get you going. Go listen to that song, like Richard says. But I thought that was a beautiful sentiment and I wanted to read that to you. I thought that you guys would appreciate that.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
They stole my village.
I know where they're taking your clan.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
We got a lot of other news stories to talk about, but I want to get to this interview. So I want to talk a little bit about this. So this is called Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV. Like I said, a four-part docuseries. You can get all of these parts on ID Discovery, and it's streaming on Max. So I highly recommend it. So it focuses on Nickelodeon. It focuses on Dan Schneider, who was one of their main architects, one of their main creators of so many shows that maybe you or your kids grew up. This was his resume. He helped create, write, and or produce the comedy series All That, Drake and Josh, Game Shakers, Henry Danger, Kenan and Kel, Sam and Cat, The Adventures of Kid Danger, The Amanda Show, Victorious, What I Like About You, Zoe 101, and most notably, iCarly. And the vast majority of these aired on Nickelodeon. So that right there is so much access to so many kids. Now, we talk about this a little bit in the interview of, you know, he was around all of these kids, and I have read blind items about Dan Schneider, I feel like, for half of my life. And the stuff in this is horrifying on its own, the stuff that they can prove. But some of this stuff, you know, like there were people like Brian Peck who actually sexually abused Drake Bell. And Drake Bell has this, you know, just such a brave admission coming forward for the first time. This is a person that worked on set, that were an adult man that worked on set, that literally, and you know, Drake Bell did come forward. They, you know, redacted his name, so they never officially knew it was him. These two reporters, these two directors were able to put two and two together that they thought this was him, and they were able to get an interview with him. And for me, it really makes the whole docuseries. But it's like Dan Schneider ran a ship where this stuff was happening. On top of that, he would sexualize these people, these kids, in certain situations, trying to like pull fast ones over on the network. Like, you know, it would be adult jokes, but making kids do them, like a shot of goo to the face, or, you know, people rubbing feet. It seemed like he had a foot fetish, you know, like him in a jacuzzi with Amanda Bynes. You really saw, but it wasn't even that. It was just the workplace that he created was a toxic work environment where even two female writers that actually came forward in the first episode of this docuseries, they talked about what he was like to be in an office for, you know, the power dynamic that was really abused in that. So he ran a real horrible ship, even though he is now going on record saying that, you know, these shows, there wasn't hidden sexual messages in them. You know, these shows are still enjoyed by millions of people worldwide to this day. In fact, today he actually releases. I'm reading from a Vanity Fair article that came out today with reactions. And Dan Schneider, Nickelodeon cut ties with him in 2018, even though he's tried to make a comeback in 2021 that has proved yet to be successful. You know, he maintains, quote, "I would absolutely do some things differently. I've learned a lot over the years about how to be a better boss. Everything that happened on the shows I ran was scrutinized by dozens of involved adults. A standards and practices group read and ultimately approved every script, and programming executives reviewed and approved all episodes. If there was an actual problem with the scenes that some people now years later are sexualizing, they would be taken down, but they are not. They are aired constantly all over the world today, still enjoyed by both kids and parents." The statement also maintained that every day on every set, there were always parents and caregivers and their friends watching filming and rehearsals. Had there been any scenes or outfits that were inappropriate in any way, they would have been flagged and blocked by this multi-layered scrutiny. Unfortunately, some adults project their adult minds onto kids' shows, drawing false conclusions about them. This was another statement. Cause he was also, he loved to get massages on set, and he would get them from any like actors, people behind the scenes, costume people. And it said, though they happen in public settings, he knows this was highly inappropriate and it would never happen again. So these were statements from him. Russell Hicks is the network's former president of content and production, referred to Schneider as one of the most prolific producers of hit television in the kids and family entertainment business. Dan's show transcends children's television and are staples in many streaming platforms today, enjoyed by both kids and their parents. Dan cared about the kids on his shows, even when sometimes their own families unfortunately did not. Hicks concluded that every single thing that Dan ever did on any of his shows was carefully scrutinized and approved by executives. Amy Berg, who had gone on to write and produce for shows, including Jack Ryan and Law and Order, was Schneider's assistant. She said, "During my year with Dan, I wasn't aware of any physically inappropriate behavior. What I can confirm, however, is that he was a fucking asshole, a psychological tormentor. He introduced me to panic attacks, and the stress of working for him caused me to develop a significant heart arrhythmia. I eventually had surgery, mostly to correct the issue, but by the point I had lost all of my 20s. He stole those years from me." She concluded her statement. "She will not be watching Quiet on Set because she has no interest in reliving anything, nor do I want to be in a situation where I'd feel inclined to defend Dan in any way." In the challenges of production, a spokesperson for Schneider told The Wrap, "In the challenges of production, Dan could get frustrated at times, and he understands why some employees found that intimidating and stressful. Dan knows he should have done better and feels awful about anyone who saw him and at his worst instead of at his best." Now, this actually brings to another interesting point that we actually talk about in the interview, is that Brian Peck, who was the man that sexually abused Drake Bell in a court, you know, this was found by a court, a lot of letters of recommendation went to the judge for Brian Peck. Brian Peck almost telling these people that, oh, Drake Bell wanted it, like just ridiculous bullshit. But a lot of some favorites of yours, you know, like people wrote letters of recommendation for Brian Peck without knowing the full story. Now, Ryder Strong and Will Friedle from Boy Meets World, they wrote, they wrote letters of recommendation for Brian Peck, and they were in their 20s at the time that they wrote these letters. So they talked about this and their feelings on Peck on their podcast. And they said, "We're sitting in the courtroom on the wrong side of everything," Friedle said, of writing letters of support for Peck and showing up at the court date. "The victim's mother turned and said, 'Look at all these famous people you brought with you, and it doesn't change what you did to my kid. I just sat there wanting to die,' Will Friedle said." And director Emma Schwartz, who you'll hear from in a second, said, "It was interesting to hear that they put out a podcast after our trailer was announced. I certainly learned a lot about what they had gone through, how they had seen Brian, from listening to the podcast. It was interesting to see that they were using some of the same language that Drake would use to describe him. Will had also been in the courtroom, and he used some of the very same language to describe how many people were there as Drake did." But, you know, this guy got letters of recommendation from like Alan Thicke, Joanna Kearns, who were like the parents on Growing Pains. Cause this guy, this abuser, he worked on sets. He worked on sets with kids. You'll see actually a video of him working with a young Leonardo DiCaprio on the set of Growing Pains. I mean, he had access to all of this stuff. He was still hired even after he was charged with this to be able to work around kids. You'll find this out in the docuseries. It's infuriating, folks.
Now, Drake Bell, he talked about his feelings after the Strong and Friedel's podcast and their remarks. He wrote this under an Instagram post. Drake Bell responds to posts that the Boy Meets World stars were victims too and manipulated by Peck like anyone else when they were minors. But Drake Bell wrote back, Will was 27 years old and Brian told him what he did. Many people turned away and said, no, I won't write a letter, but they did. So Drake having strong feelings about the Boy Meets World cast saying like, listen, dude, there were a lot of people that wouldn't write letters, but you guys did. You were in your 20s. Drake Bell continued, Will was not manipulated. Brian admitted it to him and he wrote the letter anyway. Then he worked with me on many, many episodes of the Spider-Man animated series years later and never said a word to me about it. That this is because they were not told their letters are going to be made public. Everyone thought the letters would be sealed forever and no one would ever see them. This is their publicist telling them how to get ahead of the story. It's just heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking. And you'll find out the directors still have so many questions. I hope that they do an update about this. I hope more information is able to come out, because I feel like, you know, we protect these people in real life. You know, we've gone through things like Harvey Weinstein. We've gone through these powerful men and some women, but mainly powerful men, that there's like this circle of support that the victims never have. And that's why it's important that their stories are told. And, you know, you see how it messed up. Like Drake Bell admitted how much it has messed him up since. It has given him this way of living his life that has really affected it in a negative way that he is trying to dig his way out of. I mean, Drake Bell's father in this is heartbreaking. You know, when you listen to the interviews about him trying to protect his son from Brian Peck. And Brian Peck, like, driving a wedge between Drake Bell's father and Drake. You know, he was able to successfully do that. And, you know, you see this poor man crying, realizing what his son had to go through for all those years. And it's just heartbreaking. So, you know, I don't know if you're following this story already, if this is new to you. I know this is a very serious topic, and I know we'll be goofy on this show a lot, but this is a very serious one, and I hope you'll go here with me. And, you know, check this out. But without further ado, here are the directors of Quiet on Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV. And I'm going to put the last commercial break here so I can play the interview uninterrupted. Thanks for your understanding, guys. Folks, welcome back to So Bad It's Good, presented by Betches Media. Today, I do want to give you a trigger warning to all listeners and viewers out there. We will be talking about very adult themes in this episode. I was able to watch four parts of a new ID Discovery docuseries that comes out this week about child actors, kid television, mainly Nickelodeon, and the adults that are around these children in a working environment. Toxic work environments are not just for adults. It is a stunning piece of work that I highly recommend to you guys. As lovers of pop culture, these names have been with us for years. Jamie Lynn Spears, Amanda Bynes, Ariana Grande, Jeanette McCurdy, Drake Bell, shows like Zoe 101, Drake and Josh, and names that have lived in infamy for a while now, like Dan Schneider and Brian Peck. This series is called Quiet on the Set, The Dark Side of Kids TV, and we are so lucky to have with us the directors, Mary Robertson and Emma Schwartz, with us today. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. I'm so honored that you called the series stunning. Thank you.
Well, I mean, listen, I watched all four parts at once, and it really does present this stunning portrayal of a reality that a lot of children, when they're watching these shows that they grow up on, have no idea about the toxicity behind the scenes. And as adults, these stories are coming out more and more, and you guys present a voice and an image for those stories. And for that, it is stunning.
Oh, well, we appreciate that. Thank you. I don't know if you're a parent, but we're both parents. And certainly, you know, we couldn't have made this series were it not for kids television, because we often put our kids in front of the television in order to do the work.
Yeah.
About kids television. And, you know, certainly this has been a, you know, meaningful pursuit. And, you know, one of the ways in which I think it has provoked questions for us is that it's provoked questions around, you know, what our children are consuming and the conditions under which that content is made, and why it's important to scrutinize the conditions under which it's made and to scrutinize the culture itself, because it ultimately, yes, influences and imprints upon generations.
It really does. I was wondering, is that what drew you to this? I mean, who had this initial idea of let's focus our lens on this? Because you guys have both been involved in such great pieces of work in your past. Mary, I mean, framing Britney Spears and controlling Britney Spears, like kick the Free Britney move into like hyperdrive. Emma Schwartz, I mean, an amazing Elon Musk's crash course, which I absolutely loved. What made you want to put your focus on this story? Was it just the fact that your parents?
It wasn't just the fact that we were a contributor. Like many parents and non-parents, we had noticed these compilations online, these montages of clips from some of Dan Schneider's shows. And in these clips, you see children, actors, engaging in acts, performances that are arguably sexual in nature. So, for example, you see Ariana Grande leaning off the side of a bed and pouring water on her chest and her face in a manner that is arguably sexual. You see Jamie Lynn Spears receiving a squirt of a viscous liquid on her face. You see Ariana Grande squeezing a potato in a manner, the potato arguably appears phallic. The squeezing is arguably sexual. And these were children, I mean, teenagers, young, but children. They were minors at the time. And many folks were questioning why these videos were made and the conditions under which they were made. And we thought and we think that those are valid and meaningful questions. They're not trivial questions. They're questions that, help us understand what was really happening behind the scenes. And there are questions whose answers, I think, influence our understanding of what shaped generations. At that time, in addition to the videos, Jeanette McCurdy had also published her memoir, which was contributing to the sense of momentum and curiosity. And we also read an article by Kate Taylor in Business Insider that also advanced the understanding around what might be happening behind the scenes on Schneider's sets. And we set out to see who would talk to us, in essence, and very quickly came to realize that we were in the midst of a moment, right? And you search for these moments as journalists and filmmakers. And at this particular moment, it felt as though a door was opening into a formerly dark room and light was being cast inside.
Yeah, as we began reaching out to people, many people would write back, "I'm so glad that you are, taking this on. This is so important." And I began to realize that there were so many people who had been holding so many dark secrets inside of them for so long. And, for a variety of reasons, whether they were old enough, whether it was the culture was more accepting of it, at a place where they wanted to start sharing those stories in the hopes that by sharing the darkness that they had been through, that, other people might learn from that experience.
Yeah. I mean, you do at the end of the four parts, you do sense that this is a healing thing for the people that participated in this. I read the Jeanette McCurdy book and we are to assume that she references Dan Schneider as the creator in that book. And you have such a great entrance point in this docuseries in the first episode. You know, Dan Schneider was, for all intents and purposes, the Lorne Michaels of Nickelodeon. He was a kingmaker in so many ways. And, you start with two staff writers that had to work under one paycheck, two women under one paycheck, and the insanity that they had to go through. This is their dream job. They're finally getting an opportunity in Hollywood. And you guys have been out here for a long time. It's so hard. And then they are subjected to things like, hey, bend over that desk and tell that story like you're having sex from behind, or eat two pints of ice cream for $300. Like he would put these inane things out in the room to just humiliate people. And that eventually led to a lawsuit in the first season of that show. And nothing ever changed, even after Nickelodeon was made aware. Is that correct?
There were signs from the beginning that, it was a very challenging environment for women on that set, and especially inside the writer's room. And I think when you listen to the writers, I know that we had a lot of women working on this project, and so many felt, that they had lived through maybe not as egregious moments, but experiences in their own workplace that were mirrored in terms of the impact and the emotion that you saw from Jenny and Christy in this. And it was uncomfortable, but I think all the more important to share that story.
And that's where you guys start. And then it gets into the culture of all that, which was like the SNL sketch show for kids and the kids actors working on that. And then we kind of get thrown into hyperdrive once he discovers Amanda Bynes. And the Amanda Bynes takes us through that into the CW show with Jenny Garth and, you know, him stepping in with Amanda Bynes' parents, you know, which is kind of focused on a little bit. And then he is pulled away from Amanda Bynes. But I will say, just in terms of children actors, we see this story like rinse and repeat again and again. How, you know, Amanda Bynes now, we see where she's at. I mean, I woke up to a story today from young child actor Jake Lloyd, who was Anakin Skywalker on Star Wars. His mom did an interview today that he is still in a mental health facility for this entire past year, which I found fascinating after watching this docuseries yesterday. The one, though, that is the most stunning out of this four-part docuseries is Drake Bell's admissions that he was sexually abused by Brian Peck, who he met on the set of these shows. What could you take us through how you were able to get such a brave admission out of him? Like, why did he trust you guys to reveal this information for the first time?
Really is the first time that he's sharing this story. Look, as we began reaching out to people, I think one of the questions that was really striking was when I came to understand that in a very short period of time, there had been two individuals arrested on charges of child sex abuse, Jason Handy and Brian Peck, in 2003. Both were working on the same show of All That, which was really sort of a searing moment for those child actors on those show. These men sort of disappear. Mm-hmm. And the details at the time are somewhat murky. And, you know, as we began digging into that, you begin to hear whispers of sort of, you know, who it was or what happened. And, you know, not all of those whispers are necessarily true, but we got to a point where we were pretty sure that Drake Bell was the victim in Brian Peck's case. But, you know,
the court records had been sealed for decades at that point.
And he had not publicly spoken about it. And look, anyone who's a survivor of child sex abuse, any kind of abuse, really, you never know what their comfort is in sharing, whether even reaching out could be re-traumatizing. Mm-hmm. And so we were very careful and tried to think carefully about how to reach out. And at one point I wrote a letter and that began a conversation, a back and forth over many months. Mm-hmm. And, you know, eventually he agreed to share his story. He was at a point, I think, in his life where he was trying to grapple with and heal from the trauma from, you know, 20 plus years ago that he hadn't fully processed, really, and has been on that journey to heal himself. And, you know, it's not a linear journey. There's good days and there's bad days. But, you know, I think, you know, we sat down and watched the piece together. And, you know, I think since the announcement, he's ultimately felt like there had been a bit of a weight lifted from him, that, you know, he's been carrying this dark secret. And if you're somebody in the public, how do you heal without walking through that, even as difficult as it is?
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that like how to get somebody to walk through fire when they felt so shamed for it and felt so, I mean, there's one admission in this, you guys listening out there, that, you know, shows up to court and there is a slew of people out there on Brian Peck's side of the courtroom. On his side of the courtroom, it is his like brother and mom, I think. And just the loneliness of a survivor like that. And also reading the victim or like people standing up for Brian Peck in these letters to the judge. I mean, people like Alan Thicke, Joanna Kearns from Growing Pains, because he worked on that set. You had some of the cast of Boy Meets World who have now gone on record since then saying, we had no idea that this man was actually doing these things. We thought we were standing up for a friend, but in retrospect, you see some of these letters standing up for this abuser, and it just makes your heart go that much further out to Drake Bell in that situation.
You know, these letters had never been made public before. And in fact, you know,
they were sealed too.
They were sealed. Oh yeah. Yeah. So they were like everything else in the court record, they had been sealed, but we had heard from people that, you know, who were at Nickelodeon at this time, that they had been asked to write letters of support. And so, you know, I had been a court reporter in an earlier part of my career, and I knew these should be public. Letters of support are not usually secret, and they were not released by the court. So we went to our lawyers and we said, what can we do? And they said, well, you can petition the court. So in fact, that's what, you know, we as the documentary team did. And, you know, we didn't know what we would find.
Our lawyers argued before the judge.
Wow.
Killed the court record. Not the entire court record, just the letters of support. Yes. And they didn't release names of folks who were minors when they wrote.
They redacted the names of the minors who wrote letters. And, you know, we were frankly quite surprised to see how many recognizable names there were who had written the letters. And it left us with a lot of questions. You know, how did these letters get written? What were people told? And, you know, we reached out to everyone that we named in the show, including Well, including Ryder. And, you know, they didn't respond to us, but, you know, certainly did speak about their podcast. And it was interesting to hear, you know, what they had been told and what they had had been through. And I know that
we'd love to hear more. There are many people that we haven't heard from who wrote letters of support, and we have a lot of questions, as I think the viewers do, about the conditions under which they were written. We don't know what they were told, at what point, by whom, the argument that was offered as to why they should write a letter of support, or if they were these sort of organic and spontaneous displays of support. So we have lots of questions, and we'd love to hear more, as I'm sure you would too.
Yeah, I mean, I'm even around, like, James Marsden was in there. There was a lot of names that I was shocked at, kind of like, I was like, these are heavy hitters. And of course they grew up in this industry with Brian Peck, but that doesn't matter. They're like, he feels so bad. He feels so bad about it. And they even go so far, and this is when your blood's going to boil, folks, that this kid must have been asking for it. This kid must have been the aggressor in this situation. And that's the part where I was just like, sometimes there's these cultural moments where you feel like we've all lost our heads. And only after decades pass, do we actually regain some sort of clarity and common sense thinking.
I think one of the things that is really striking about these letters is it adds a new layer to the power dynamics that have been at play for that we were looking at it quiet on the set. You know, here you have the power dynamics of people inside of Hollywood writ large. But in the series, you know, we look at the dynamics between children and their parents, parents and the showrunners, mm-hmm. children and the showrunners, and really trying to grapple with this question of who has power, who can consent, and in what ways, right? Because as a child, you don't necessarily have the same ability to consent.
We now know, and I think have a sharper understanding of the reality that for many child stars, they're earning money for their family. That's of critical importance. Sometimes it's the primary source of income. They love their jobs. They love a lot of what comes with their jobs, I should say, maybe not all of it, but a certain amount of adulation, a certain amount of play that comes with it. They don't want to lose their jobs. Their family doesn't want them to lose their jobs. So that certainly creates a situation, a dynamic where they're not necessarily empowered to be able to say, you know, I feel uncomfortable having that peanut butter applied to my body and having those dogs lick that off.
Oh my gosh, that poor kid. Yeah, you know, and his mom was in the docuseries as well talking to him. I mean, yeah, that is like, guys, and just, we're talking to some of the bigger moments of this, but it's so heavily researched. It has parents, it has kids. I mean, like, all, you know, people that worked on the show. So it is really a deep dive into all of these shows. But the Drake piece of it is the one I think that's going to stand out the most and going to get the most eyes on this, which is so good because all 4 hours of this deserve to be watched. But I, you know, speaking of the parents, I keep going back to Drake Bell's father. His father's a part of this, who was the one managing his career. And this Brian Peck kind of almost, you know, stood in between Drake and his father, said, this guy shouldn't manage you. He doesn't have your best interests at heart, which is hysterical, knowing what Brian had in store for Drake. And then I love that he is still a part of this. And you know, towards the end, we see them, you know, the father just looks like he's been through hell through all of this on top of, you know, watching his son go through this. And I was just wondering, like, after all of this research, all of this, you know, when you do this, like, what are you left with in terms of what is the answer for children's TV? Like, is, you know, what should, I deal with reality shows a lot, and there's like a reckoning, you know, quote, you know, happening potentially about mental health and a bigger conversation around things like that. Should children's TV exist?
Well, I will say that in the course of making this, Emin, I had dinner with one of our sources, and over the course of the meal, they asked us, will you have child actors in your recreations? And at that moment, we looked at each other and we knew that there was no way we would have child actors in our recreations. And it's not because we feared that they would be exposed to an abuser, but because we had become aware of the problematic power dynamics and that, you know, there is a risk of creating situations at which kids don't feel empowered or have agency, and that the existence in those situations can have long-lasting impacts. It also didn't feel necessary. I like what we did with a bunch of backpacks and pencils on the tables.
Yeah, I mean, it was just as effective. And old clips of the show is all you needed.
Old clips of the show, it's all that you need. So, you know, listen, I think that we have, as a culture, made great advancements in terms of workplace conditions generally and workplace conditions within the entertainment industry. But, you know, I ask you, do you think we have a ways to go?
I do. I mean, there's a long way to go. And the thing is, like, we're seeing things like this. We're watching Amanda Bynes. We're reading Jeanette McCurdy's book. And it's like, the answers are all there. It's just, how do we actually put something in play? Because at the end of the day, we're not even really talking about Nickelodeon and Dan Schneider yet. Money matters. Like, corporations do not care at the end of the day. Nickelodeon reached out for comment on this and, you know, gave the same, I think, patented quote you would get of, we put so many, you know, different things in place and we're a better working environment. I believe Dan Schneider refused to participate in this. But, you know, I think, you have some quotes from him. Is that correct in this?
We went to him for an interview request. He declined to interview on camera, so we sent him questions, and those responses are reflected in the series.
Yeah, I did a deep dive on him yesterday, wondering what he's up to, and all I could really find was a New York Times piece from 2021 where he has lost 100 pounds and is trying to make his return to Hollywood. And, I mean, that's the one thing, is he does do these responses, but I just wonder in a very real way if he realized when he's getting onset massages from cast members and crew, in retrospect, is there a realization of how badly he messed with that power dynamic? And I think what's also interesting is that the spotlight on Reddit threads and, like, all these, you know, YouTube videos has been on him when, you know, we had people like Brian Peck and Mr. Handy that worked on these sets that were out there. I mean, just the culture that seemed to have been created by this man is really mind blowing, and how long that reign went. But I am curious in the sense of, were there any leads that you were not were there parts of this story that had to fall by the wayside because of time constraints or because you were not able to pursue it? Like, a lead actually kind of fell apart that wasn't comfortable in coming forward potentially?
I'll say this. I think that, there are a lot of legitimate questions, that have swirled around, you know, Dan Setz, Dan Schneider himself. There are also a lot of questions that, you know, aren't based and aren't rooted in fact. There are a lot of accusations that surround
it. Yeah.
We have not been able to stand up and we don't believe to be true. I think that, which is all to say that, you know, I never begrudge people their curiosity or their inquiry. But I think that it's important to have journalists out there in the world who engage in the work of separating fact from fiction. And we've made an effort here to separate fact from fiction and to put forward our most comprehensive and complete understanding of what was happening on these sets at this time. Is there more that could be known? Absolutely. And we hope that, you know, we hope that more people come to us with their stories and accounts of what was happening.
I mean, that's the one thing, is that I was like, I've read such insane things. And the thing is, that's why I so appreciated this and the power of the team behind this, because it's like, there is just as insane real things that happen that can be proved, that are documented, that these, you know, survivors have come forward with their own stories out of their own mouths. And like, I had read this insane things, but real insane things were happening. We just, sometimes these internet sleuths didn't go after that with the fervor that it sometimes warranted. And instead I heard, like, Dan Schneider's having kids with babies, you know, kids on the set, and like all of this wild stuff that is so unfortunate, but he did create the most toxic work environment that I could possibly have imagined. Though, I mean, what do you hope coming out, like, this gets viewed by everybody next week. This is going to be, you know, I can already see blogs, YouTube videos. Everybody's going to be making TikToks out of certain, you know, we've already seen a little bit with some Drake Bell stuff that is released. What do you hope people remember and people take away from this viewing experience?
You go first.
Well, look, I have, as you know, I have, you know, handled all kinds of investigations and stories about lots of, you know, obviously very, very serious and important topics here. And I don't think I ever would have said, oh, I'm going to do a piece looking at children's television. But, you know, as a parent, as someone who quite literally relies on children's television in my daily life, understanding and scrutinizing what we teach our children, what we allow them to consume, really felt very important as a parent. And I hope that what this series does is it sparks a conversation about this world, these dynamics, and helps that conversation grow.
I would say two things. I think it's meaningful to strive to create work environments in which agency is distributed, power is distributed, and those in all sort of positions feel as though they can be heard. And then I also, like Emma, believe it is deeply, profoundly important to look at the culture, what we now often call content, but look at the culture that we are creating and interrogate the conditions under which it was made, because it will influence generations. It inspires and creates their sense of normal.
Yeah, I was just, I really appreciate things like this. You put it brilliantly, you know, separating fact from fiction earlier. And, you know, we're in the middle of a world where we don't know where Kate Middleton is. Everybody's sleuthing on that, which, by the way, please make a documentary on that. I need somebody to trust about every, you guys seem to be the perfect people. But it is interesting is that, like, your actual, you know, your Emmy award winning, you know, professionals that do this, that actually chase down leads. And, you know, even, you know, listening to Dan Schneider in this, talking to somebody for an interview where, like, I just want to make sure the thing that I do next is going to be better than the thing I did before. And watching where we're going as a society in terms of news and bite-sized news, is it harder and harder for you to be able to tell long-form stories that actually break down the truth in a bite-sized culture like TikTok? Is that frustrating for you, or are you loving that you get to tell these stories in the long-form manner in which these are presented?
We have amazing partners at ID who believe deeply in this form and believe that, you know, I think we share the belief that this form can engage an enormous audience and through that engagement have enormous impact.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, that's the thing is that I just watched this and I was like, I can't wait for the next thing that you guys do. Is that already in like this? Like, is that, I mean, are you already signed up for a thing with ID immediately after this? Are you allowed to even speak about what might be on your brains next?
We love working with ID and hope that we can work with them for a long time to come. And listen, we think that there's a lot more, you know, that can be said about this story. So we do. If you have stories, if you worked on these sets, if you're close to these experiences and want to share more, we'd love to hear.
That's the other thing I thought watching this was that there should be a follow-up, because I imagine once this is going to be released, it's going to even shed more light on the culture. I mean, that you said, I think you are a part of a moment right now, and that this like summarizes where we are, but where are we going to head out? And even in terms of the Britney Spears FX documentaries, you had one at the beginning that set everything off, and then you had another one. And that's what I was thinking about. This is a, you know, a two-part follow-up potentially, because also, you also see with Drake Bell, especially, is that when, you know, as a kid, this happens, this shapes the rest of your life. He talks very openly, folks, about, you know, the troubles, the pitfall, you know, the speed bumps he's had in his own life. And now going through trauma counseling and rehab and somebody trying to build themselves up and realizing that he is just human and that he was a child when this was happening. It's such a powerful statement in this that you guys were able to capture. As we wind down here, when you got that footage of him, did you have chills? Like, I mean, I had chills watching that. As documentarians, when you're watching that, do you realize you are witnessing something like very monumental?
I think there, you know, the day is that Drake was on set with us. I've never been on a set that was quite as quiet. You really, you know, you couldn't hear anyone rustling in their chairs. We were still and we were observant and listening.
Yeah, I mean, his story will stick with me forever.
Yeah. And one last thing to the people listening. You know, sometimes you'll watch these docuseries and they are so sensationalized. They are meant to titillate or horrify. And these, you know, you will definitely be horrified about aspects of this. But like I said, this is done in such a manner. You know, you are watching something that I think is really special, that is worth your time. The way this is edited together, the stories that you get from the survivors, from the background. As pop culture lovers, it is important to look at where we came from and also to be able to think where we're going to and in a better way that we can build these things and question yourselves. Think about yourselves. A lot of you guys grew up watching these shows and how it made you feel at the time, but we did watch every one of these child stars go on to certain areas that we worried about them. And I think this shows exactly why those situations were sometimes at play. And like I said, just really a stunning piece of work. Again, thank you so much for being here today. I hope I get to talk to you guys again, because I was reading through your credits and I was like, I've watched so many of these things. I could do a whole 8-hour interview with you guys, because really just awesome. I know I'm kissing your butts right now, but it is just really good. So is there anything else that you would?
We would love to. Yeah. We would love to. You are so kind.
I know.
Really,
I'm going to tell my mom to listen.
Hey, yeah, yes, please. I'll talk to your mom. But is there anything else that you would like for the audience to know or to do? I'm telling everybody to DVR and watch it. But how else can we support so we can make sure your relationship with ID continues for years and years to come?
Thank you for that, too. Fight on Set premieres March 17th and 18th on ID. And we would love it if you watched and engaged with the program.
Well, thank you, ladies, so much for coming here today. I think everybody's going to be really blown away, and thank you for your work.
Thank you.
So Bad It's Good is a Betches Media production. The show is hosted and produced by me, Ryan Bailey, with Meditza Lopez and Sandra Fryer. Additional support provided by Sean Kilby, Jorge Morales-Pico, and Rebecca Steinberg. Guest booking by Ali Friedlander. Video promotion by Laura Valencia. Be sure to send us your emails at sobaditsgoodwithryanbailey@gmail.com and follow the show at sobaditsgoodwithryanbailey on Instagram. And for additional craziness, go to patreon.com/sobaditsgood. Stay bad, baddies.
Betches.